Mike, hang on me real quick. A lot of people already are asking me that story. They're both rolling.
They're going.
Okay. Today's a very, very important shiur. It's a shiur that you may have used the rest of your lives. First of all, let's say hello to everybody. It's April 14th, 2013. It's Sunday evening. It's a very sad Sunday evening because we're just a few hours before Yom HaZikaron. And those of us, I've lived here 44 years, I cannot tell you how many people I know I buried, killed by Arab terrorist murderers, including many students, children of students, people I inspired to come in Aliyah, or at least played a role in their Aliyah, their children, they, and of course, what can I say, David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, Nava, the night before her wedding, after she went to mikveh, it still pains. Last Thursday night, or was it this past Thursday? No, a week ago Thursday, I was privileged to be at the wedding of the last Applebaum child, the last daughter got married. So Baruch Hashem, life continues. I want to also mention we're all very saddened by the death of Rabbi Yaakov Yosef. I actually met him the first time at the Kotel. He would come Friday night to the Kotel. And during the summer when I daven early, I would always bump into him, and it was inspiring. His Gadlut in Torah is here at Shemaim, you know about. His honesty, I'll quote one sentence from him that inspires me. He said in relation to the Eidot HaMizrach, they're only accepted as true brothers, as true brethren, in two areas. One, the Tzioni Dati world, and two, the Chabad world. And I want to say, Yashar Koyach, Reb Yaakov Yosef, you told it as it was. Zecher Tzadik Livracha. I want to mention, when it comes to Rav Shachtas, I mentioned there are a number of areas that he was questioned, and I saw we totally agree, although he's a little bit sharper than I am. But the one area I forgot to mention, I mentioned the mitzitz of a pair, I mentioned serving the army. Also, he asked drinking on Purim. So I want to say I'm not alone in my attitude to what goes on Purim. Regarding the story I told you about Dubi Hartman, Rabbi Dr. Professor. And so there's another version floating around that boats capsize and we still sail. But that's not the real version. The real version is the way I told it. I heard it directly from Dubi. I heard it directly from Rabaran, who heard it from Dubi. But I can prove it very simply. How many times did the Rav go on a boat? As far as I know, and I think you know, I know the history of the Rav's life, three times. Once to America, once to Israel, and once back to America. Outside of that, how many times did he go on a plane? Twice, at least, Boston, New York, New York, Boston, weekly, for many, many decades. And when Dubi spoke with the Rav, believe me, the boats were ancient history, but the planes were real. So I stand on the way I told the story. Not that it matters, because either way, the story comes out the same. Okay, I want to roll now, and it's the heart of Pesach today. So, number one, we spent a lot of time on a very famous radish. I would say that story with Reb Chaim Volozhiner and all the sources I gave you last week is a story that lives on until today. What do we do? Halacha l'maisa? You have to ask poskim in Israel. Ask Rabbi Bednash what they paskin. But I have a feeling that the red radishes that we have here are sharp. I have a feeling they would be considered davar hacharif, and you would have a problem if it's a ben yomo and it's duchaka de sakina. I believe you would. In America, I don't see white radishes here. They're more turnips than white radish. But I know that the white radish, also it's questionable how sharp it is. What sharp is sharp? certainly beets are not sharp, but radishes could be in Israel, that these radishes are davar charif, and we have to pass them like the machaber, and it would become a shayla of basa v'chalav if there would be a question of a knife, and afterwards, let's say, a chalav v'knife, and cooked in a basari pot. All right. Now, we then ask the question, we have so many yesh omrims in the Shulchan Aruch. You open up your Yoredeya, you'll find it in all Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, but I believe, and I haven't checked it out scientifically, I believe you find more yesh omrims in Yoredeya than in any other chelik of the Shulchan Aruch. And the question is, who do we paskin when we have a yesh omrim? So I quoted to you the Shach. We ended off the Shir last week. I showed you the Shach. I showed the Rav Avadya Yosef that whenever the halacha is stated stam, anonymously, that this is the halacha, and then there's a Yesh Omrim and a Yesh Omrim and a Yesh Omrim, we paskin like the first concept the Shulchan Aruch mentioned or the Ramah mentioned. That's Me'ika Ha. Din Me'ika HaHalacha. The Yesh Omrims are other opinions, but they don't accept them as the most basic opinion. Why are they there? Why does the Shulchan Aruch mention them? And that we'll see later today, because that takes us into the whole area of subjectivity in Psak. I want to go one step further now, and I didn't say this last week, but Rav Avadya Yosef, when he discusses the Yesh Omrims in the same source I gave you last week, subdivision Yud Gimel, not Yud Dalet, Rav Avadya says, when you have no anonymous opinion, we're just beginning, Michael, we're just reviewing, we're picking up. When you have no anonymous opinion, and you begin with Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, then Rav Avadya feels the halacha is like the last Yesh Omrim. So it's fascinating. But now we come to a tremendous question. Why is there such an amorphous feeling in Psak? And this takes us back to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Rav Aaron taught me an expression many decades ago, before most of you were born, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He said about one of his sons, and it's Dafka the son who spoke last Wednesday night, Rav Meir, that Rav Meir was born with a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Neshama. And there are people, I have one grandson, or I might have more than one grandson actually, who I would say have a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Neshama. Well, what does that mean? What's amazing about the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, everything is organized, everything is black and white, everything is beautiful, there are no big problems there, it's easy to find an answer. Of course, at times he may be more machmir than necessary, after all, he's an Ungarische, and if you know Hungarians and you know Psak, it is true that at times they're more machmir, but everything is static and beautiful. And that's the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch Neshama. Is it good? We've already discussed it, and I've discussed it so many times over the millennium, and I've discussed this Shiloh with Gedolei Yisrael. Is it good to teach kids the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch? And the answer is yes, you have to. A child needs boundaries. But if you're a smart Rebbe, you will already instill in a young kid the understanding that there are other opinions too. That Rav Shlomo Gansfried is not the only opinion of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And if you want to meet his direct descendant, join me for Maariv at the Shtiblach when I daven. Again, I daven the Shachris always in the same place and the same time. For the time has changed over the decades. As I grow older, it goes earlier. I used to daven at the 7:30 minyan, the 7 minyan, the 6:30 minyan, the 6 minyan. Now I'm a regular at the 5:30 minyan for many years, but that's a function of age. But when I daven at the Shtiblach, we have a minyan, the first minyan for Maariv outside, 20 minutes after Shkia. I would daven 18 minutes, but I can't be over. Get it there. So I will introduce you. At the minyan is a guy named Jack Friedman. He is a direct descendant of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and wrote a book about his great-great-grandfather. And his son is the Rabbi Friedman, who's a Ram in Yeshiva Kerem B'Yavna. So if you've studied in Kerem B'Yavna and studied with Rabbi Friedman, you have studied with a direct descendant of the Kitzah Shulchan Aruch. But that's the Kitzah. When it comes to life, life is much more complicated. And you have tragedies in life, you have problems in life, you have tension in life, you have pressure in life. And the halacha becomes very malleable. I would use the word flexible. But you have to be a Talmud Chacham. You have to understand. And this is what the Rabbi Rubin threw out last week. I don't know if it was in the Sunday class or the Monday class. He said, why not depend upon the psak of... He mentioned the name. I don't want to repeat the name now because I'm going to say something negative. And yes, when it comes to psak, it has to be someone reliable, someone with Yirat Shemayim. It's not just enough to know. The classic example, there were great scholars in America who knew how to learn, were not Jewish. You don't have to go any further than Professor Albright in Baltimore. They said when the fellows in Israel had a difficult Gemara, they would come to Professor Albright, whether it's true or not, but it's an anecdote, and the anecdote tells you what they thought of him. There were others.
Travis Herford.
He obviously at Harvard. There was Professor Struck in Germany, who Hermann Struck, I believe his name was, who wrote, not only in Eretz Israel, but a Lamdin. He knew how to learn. But nevertheless, you wouldn't go to such people to Paskin Ashayla.
Why would you go in and want
to
become
Tamiya Chacham? So I'll tell you the following. Imagine you go to the Rav and you say, Rebbe, I'm interested in Chinese literature. You know what the Rav would tell you? Study it, get a doctor in it, become a professor, master it. Let me know if you find any trends in Chinese literature that reflect Chazal, that reflect Jewish philosophy, middle-aged Jewish philosophy. Just as we can be interested in Chinese literature, and you know, there are Jews who were professors. There was a fellow at Yeshiva College who was the biggest expert on Irish literature in the world. He received awards from the Irish government. Do you remember his name, Yitzhak? What was his name?
Maurice Vogelander.
Right, Professor Vogelander from the Vogelander family. Maurice Vogelander. He's alive, yeah, I hope so. Yeah, the biggest guy in the world. He received awards from the Irish government. So there can be a Gentile who's interested in Judaic sources. You see in China today, in Korea today, South Korea, they're interested in the Talmud. They have translations. They find tremendous wisdom there. So that answers your question. But I wouldn't go to a non-Jew to Paskin Shaila. You have to have Yirat Shemayim, you have to be a Reb Moshe, you have to be a Rav Avadya Yosef. And I want to tell you, the yeshiva world, and you know, you can have your own opinions, and you can be Haredi, you can be whatever you want. Choice is given. But you have to think, you have to be honest. In the yeshiva world, whenever you mention Rav Avadya's name in this Haredi world, the Litvish Welt, They mock him. He doesn't have depth. He doesn't have understanding. Let me tell you, no one equals his bekiyat. That he's not Reb Chaim Brisker in analyzing the Rambam. I agree. But when I want a psak, I don't want Reb Chaim Brisker. I want a psak from Rav Avadya Yosef. And you have to understand. Don't let anyone put him down and tell you he doesn't have depth. He doesn't have the analysis. He's not famous for being Reb Chaim Brisker, but no one would ever accuse Reb Chaim Soloveitchik of being a posek like Rav Avadya Yosef.
His son disagreed with him. He just passed away.
His son disagreed. Please, we just spoke about him. You guys coming late? You missed the heart of the shiur already. I said important matters, and you were not here. But Reb Yaakov Yosef disagreed with him hashgacha wise. Not in learning. Please don't confuse the hashkafa with the learning.
You tell you don't have to be
Reb Chaim. No, in order to paskin Reb Chaim, it was a fault. It was a fault that he was Reb Chaim. He couldn't paskin anymore. But anyway, be as it may, I've spoken about Reb Chaim so many times, but I get offended when people from the Litvishe Welt dig Rav Avadya Yosef. You can dig from today to tomorrow, but you can't take away his katluk and psak, his understanding of psak, his knowledge, his far-reaching knowledge. He's a posek in the great tradition of the Sfatik, poskim, achronim, yureim v'shleimim. His hashgaf, all right. That's a different story. If you don't separate his hashkafa from the psakim, you wind up with a tremendous problem. And Rakefet has lived long enough to feel, and I hope I'm right, that politics come and go. Machloikis comes and goes. But the learning lives on for eternity. And take the learning. The hashkafa, we can argue, Baruch Hashem, I just quoted Rabbi Yaakov Yosef very powerfully. Okay, now, so because life has all this pressure, and I don't want to minimize, what this is all about. Money is money. Thank God, there's no one in this class who's impoverished. You know what it means to be poor? You have any idea? I lived through Israel in the post-Yom Kippur period. And I can tell you, I worked 2 full jobs. I didn't have money for food for the 4th Shabbat of the month. And we're not talking luxurious or elegant food. We're talking plain, simple bread and butter. So I know, like Baruch Hashem, I'm not happy that this happened to me. It affects my family until today, because not one of my children, my grandchildren, B'nei B'marem K'banim, wants to be a Rebbe. And many of them, some of them, they're all Yerem V'Shleimer, but some of them have a tremendous learning and tremendous capability. They're mentioned, they could be wonderful Rebbeim. And they all give me the same answer. They want to make a living. We want to make a living. Okay, I understand it. But a Rav, when you get a Shaila, could you imagine a poor man is right before Shabbos, a few drops of milk dropped into the chicken soup. You understand? Then you have boshet panim. You have guests coming and the orchim. I mean, these are all halakha concepts. That's merubah, orchim. You have guests coming. And right before Shabbos, a few drops of milk drop into the chicken soup. At a shiva like that, where in my building where I live, where right before Shabbat these people had guests coming and they forgot and they were worried that the cholent wasn't third cooked already. Can they leave it? You know, the whole shiva with leaving something uncooked on the blech and guests are coming. Archim, these are difficult shilas, but not the difficult shilas. Then you get into shilas, and I've told you many times, here in the state of Israel in Gathering of the Exiles, you must have tens of thousands of children, Balei Tshuva, from America, from South Africa, from Australia, from Russia, where these kids are worried their mom's Aram. You understand? You get a shiloh, a kid. What do you think a mamzer is? We use Hebrew. You know, you throw out the word, you're a mamzer. Like, you throw out these derogatory words. You're a mamzer. What is a mamzer? He's a human being. He's blood and flesh. I had in my class, in this very building, I believe, or if not in Rehov Nili, I had a kid who never married. Kid is a mamzer. A nice kid. Yerei Shemayim, Abal Tshuva, Medakdei Kala Kachamura. The kid, he's hitting 60 today, he may be even already 60, never married. He's written up, by the way, in the history of where he comes from, Australian jury, the case is referred to in black and white. And I'm sure he wanted to marry. I don't know, I was not his rabbi at the time, but when I heard about it, I tried to get involved. They told me, keep away, every rabbi in the world, there's no solution. I know what the story was. The story was, it's the Reform rabbi. It is so decadent, so horrendous. the kid's mother was married, and they were married kedat v'kedin, and the mother became completely religious, and she decided to walk away from her husband, and there was a fight between them, and a Reform rabbi said, you don't need to get, well, you can remarry, I'll remarry you, it's not a problem, gave her a civil divorce, remarried her, and the kid from the second marriage became a Baal Tshuva. And both men, as I told you, were Jews. So you get a Shiloh like that, that Shiloh already is earth-shaking, to put it mildly. I'll give you another example of Shilohs. Just think of World War II. Just think, sitting in the room, there's at least one survivor sitting here. Some of you are children or grandchildren of survivors. Just think, after World War II, men, women, their husbands don't show up, their wives don't show up. No, what do you say? They can't remarry? If they can't remarry, let alone the personal tragedy, look at the tragedy for the Jewish people, that if they can't remarry, we would not have 6 million plus Jews in Eretz Yisrael as we move into our 66th year. So, I mean, you get a Shaila like this, an Aguna. This is an unbelievable Shaila. And remember, an Aguna remains an Aguna. We're not on the Eretz here. This is not a Shas politician talking. I'm still furious at that half-wit. It took 48 hours until someone corrected him. It was beyond words. I don't know. I suffer when I see him ratzet in public. Any Chavei Knesset or anyone, the Memshalat Yisrael, do not use the title Rav. The title is suspended until you come back to the normal world, in my humble opinion. So aguna means you don't have a body, by definition. If you have a body, what's the big deal? A body is a body. Put a pin in it. Doesn't bleed. Look up whether it's brain death, heart death. I don't want to get involved in all the machlokes. But you know what's going on. But a body is a body. But aguna, you're going to be matar and aguna, you don't have a body. This is earth shaking, but it is an earth shaking tragedy. I need not tell you today what we discussed before down in the base medrash. A guy, a Gera Chassid, I think, sitting in an El Al plane. He's totally covered by a plastic tent, and the whole world locks eyes on Orthodox Judaism, ultra-Orthodox. It was a Shaila.
This really happened.
Yeah, the picture's all over the world. What are you talking about, that it really happened? Oh, Yitzchak, wake up and discover a computer and learn how to use it properly. I learned how when I was over 70. Tuma, because you're flying over cemeteries and Tuma Bokavola. You understand? Don't say Meshuggah. It has to be worked out halachically. But there's no question that there are tremendous pressures on the Posek. This is not a simple Shiloh. And by the way, I want to tell you, Herbie. I want to tell you, with the Mitzitza Bepeh, yeah, that Baruch Hashem, went out on a limb a long time ago. I'm happy to see Rav Heschel Shechter is even more extreme than I am. So Mitzitza Bepeh, I just spoke with America. They told me, and this is the person I spoke with is my Talmud, but he's not from the wider world. He's from a more right-wing world, although he's very broad and very open. He teaches in Lambda College, and he told me there's a talk show in New York, Savage, someone named Savage. He said he devoted 2 hours to Mitzitza Bepeh, and it has like Orthodox Judaism, like we're
his
hip.
His real name is Wiener.
Whatever. They say he's an Oy of Israel. Okay, but you're going
to
be Jewish and a son of Israel.
I'm married to a Jewish woman.
Okay. Anyway.
This is a Pekuach Nefesh issue.
I understand.
This is a Chil Hashem.
I understand.
The Goyim, what do they think they are?
What do they think?
And the Chabad carry people over in boxes. They carry Kohanim in boxes to the Rebbe's cave. That's not.
They carry them in boxes.
They put them in a box and they carry them over the
Kadua Poreach.
So what's an airplane? How is an airplane any different?
None of us say that. I said they have to check out their Chuvat on it. Akronim did deal with it. Because the plane is always moving. The plane is always moving.
So
there is Bani Shalolim, it's Tuma Bokad for Ola. But who's to say you're right over the cemetery? I don't think they plan, and I know with Israel that they're taking off, they on purpose don't go over any cemeteries in Israel. Also, it could be it's a Goyish cemetery. There too is a different halachic concept.
Is it but possible it, the guy's off his rocker?
No. Say that. But these questions are real, and this is what a posek has to deal with. Now, I'm going to give you an unbelievable source in a minute, but I want to say the following, and we want to come back and spend the real good time analyzing this, and I'm going to give you material that you'll be able to use in public lectures and teaching. But I want to say, just to understand where we're beginning, and we'll come into it in halacha, black and white. Generally speaking, anything that infringes upon a Torah law, we are machmir. Anything that is rabbinic, there we can have a lot of subjectivity. And this is what halacha is all about. And if you open up responsa literature, you will see, and we're talking about responsa literature, tens and tens of thousands of volumes. How much has been written on every topic? If you can look at response literature, you will see that most of the tshuvot that are written, what are they trying to establish? That it's a rabbinic question. Once it's a rabbinic question, then subjectivity can start to play a major role. And I'll give you a simple example. You take the question of Mamzeret. If you've learned the final perek of Masechet Kedushin, you'll see Lo Yavol Mamzer Vadai Bekal Hashem. Lo Yavol Mamzer Bekal Vadai. The minute you can establish that the child in front of you is a Safek Mamzeret, at that moment, it's a rabbinic law. Once it's the rabbinic law, we can read Marbeh B'Sveikot, we can add Snifim. We have subjectivity that enables us to see if we can be matir within the halachic context. And that's Reb Moshe. If you look at the Tshuvot of Reb Moshe, you will see that I don't believe there's a Shail of Mamzeret where he didn't find a solution. Why? Because every contemporary Shaila basically is a She'elah d'Rabbanan. It's a Suffolk Mamsa. You take Aguna, if you're familiar with the Sugya Yevama, Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph, the whole Sugya of Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof. Logically speaking, a man who disappears, how does he disappear? Went to war, never returned. Logically speaking, he was killed in battle. Killed in battle. Those of you who have been on a battlefield, and I think some of you did army here in Israel, you know very well a battlefield is helter-skelter. You can plan from today to tomorrow. And in the army, I once gave a whole talk that in the army, 99% of your time is preparing for the 1% that you may be in battle. But once you're in battle, I've been on battlefields. The noise alone is deafening. Helicopters overhead, tanks up ahead, guns are shooting, communications behind you, water, food, field hospital, Hefer Kandisha. It's helter-skelter. You have war trauma. I don't have to tell you what goes on. And so, the body was left. The body was buried. We don't know what happened to the body. Logically, he's dead. A plane goes down in the ocean. I heard the channel of off New York. I told you the famous story. Rabbi Famin Schoenfeld's wife, Ruth, her first husband, Chassidische junger Mann. She was a Rebbe's Tochter. And if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi, I think she was a lifer. And he was a businessman, a survivor. And on that plane, Saturday night, I think it was in the winter, maybe November, when Shabbos ended early, they were flying to South America, import-export business. There were a few Frumme Yidden on the plane. And the plane went down off the channel of the bay. It was never heard from. Gone. Took a long time till they recovered what they recovered. But logically speaking, he's dead. Ah, but there's one problem. That's on a Torah level. On a rabbinic level, if you're familiar with the Sugya and Yevamot, Mayim Shein Lehem himself. That's the rubric. You follow me, Daniel? Well, what does it mean? That there are always miracles. Since you can't stand at all sides of the ocean, maybe a miracle happened, the whale swallowed him, spat him out, you didn't see. And the Gemara tells stories with Rabbi Meir, with Rabbi Akiva, the ships capsized, they held on to wood from the ship, and the waves, and every wave they went on top of the wave, and they arrived on shore while people were sitting shiver for them. So Chazal made a gezeira that we cannot go the oraita, we cannot go logically, rabbinically, whenever we can't be certain, Mayim She'en Lehem himself, water that has no end, we can't stand on all sides of the Mediterranean, we asa the woman from remarrying. But that's a rabbinic law. The minute you bring it into rabbinic level, you follow me, Yehuda? The minute you bring it into a rabbinic level, there are other factors that apply. Now, where do we find this very concisely? On one hand, when you learn Dalat Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, you will find what I'm saying all over. If you learn responsa literature, you will find what I'm saying all over. But where do we find it black and white? And here is a very famous sif in the Shulchan Aruch that I already quoted to you in relation to manuscripts, but now I want to quoted in toto, Choshen Mishpat, Chaf Hei, Sif Bet, in the Ramah. Choshen Mishpat, Chaf Hei, Sif Bet, in the Ramah. And I will elaborate afterwards with the Shach and make some comments on what I'm quoting. But with this introduction, you will follow this Sif very easily. And the Ramah says, a person shouldn't say, I'll paskin whatever I paskin. And of course, this is adaptive halacha. This is my big debate with Professor Hartman. Chaval, I didn't record it. I should have put a recording on the phone. We were shouting. I mean, I can't shout physically. But boy, I was hot. And he can shout. He's powerful. And what was our big debate? Over Hafka, a woman is, and you know, men today, I can quote the Rav, Rebbe said, quote, it's not the halacha that it's fault, but it's humans that are at fault, end quote. In other words,
no,
if you...
it's not the halacha, it's the rabbis.
Don't criticize the rabbis, don't criticize yourself. We have great rabbanim. Rav Ovadia, you have no idea what a good heart he has. I know Rav Ovadia. I have sat with Rav Ovadia. You have no idea. And what, Rav Bezalel Zolti and Rav Yitzchak Kulitz, these are friends of mine. These were poskim. But either you surrender to halacha or go to Mordechai Kaplan's class like will be tomorrow and you'll see what's doing there with Mordechai Kaplan. Wait till I pull tomorrow on you. You're going to really have something special. But leave that for tomorrow. Leave that for tomorrow. Tomorrow you're teaching or you're free? You're teaching, all right?
I'll give them the notes.
You give them not enough the notes. You have to hear the Rebbe. When the Rebbe sees you, it encourages the Rebbe. There's an interaction here. Forget about the internet. That's for the people in Australia and the wilds of Canada, not for the people that are in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Now, one second. So, you see, what did Hartman say? He said very simply, the Rav was cruel. The Rav was terrible. He published it later. Why was the Rav cruel? The woman marries a man who's an animal. The marriage breaks up. And there are humans like this. And unfortunately, even among my own Talmidim, I've had people who refuse to give a get. As a matter of fact, in this building, on this floor, I can show you the room where I had a Talmid arrested by the police for refusing to give a get. On this floor. It's not for now. Sat in jail, just what I predicted. All right, finally gave the get, but it's beyond words what humans are capable of doing, the hatred, the enmity. And I quote Rav Avram Pam, the Torah V'das Rosh Yeshiva, Mindav Zayin Mensch. And if you have to divorce, divorce in dignity, just the way you married in dignity. And I spoke about it, and I don't want to repeat what I said years ago. I brought down a lot of Makorot. But Mindav Zayin Mensch. Excuse me?
Don't jump out the window of the courthouse.
Don't jump. It's beyond words what he's saying. It's. Believe me, a woman was just interviewed. I have it right here in the latest issue of Nashim. A fabulous issue. I'm so impressed with this. A ladies' home journal that you can look at. I know some of the women that they talk about here. And you take it for your wife. And in the article, they interview a TV personality, and she says, quote, she regrets having gotten married by the rabbi after that guy jumped out of the second floor window. She quotes the case. She says that, God forbid, any woman can be left an aguna, quote, unquote. So Hartman is screaming, Brackman was right, Hafkat Kedushin, why did the rabbi interfere? Why did the rabbi criticize him? All right. This is adaptive halacha. There's a halacha, we surrender. Eshadish. There's no easy solution. If the man refuses to give a get, thank God the Supreme Court in Israel last week gave a fabulous ruling that a guy who refuses to give a get is jailed for life. Until now they jailed him for 10 years, and this mamzer is in jail 10 years. Room and board, my taxes pay for it. I would whip him every day. The problem is, we're not an Arab country. In Saudi Arabia, they behead him Friday. And that's the Kofano Toat Shomer Rotsani. That's the halacha. Look into the Rambam in Hilchot Gerushin, how the Rambam explains it. I'm a frum Jew. What can I do?
But the rabbis in Israel allow prenuptial...
Rav Nechzalman Nechemya Goldberger absolutely allows it. My daughter... What Rabbanim, the Dayanim, you have to go before a Dayan, Yitzchak. My daughter makes a living out of prenuptial agreements, and it has to go to the Dayanim, and they have to certify it, absolutely. I'm not talking Meir Sharim, I'm talking in the Batei Dinim of the State of Israel. I'm pretty sure the Eidah Haredit Beit Din may not do it, but they'll send you to my daughter. She's gotten a lot of clients from them, because they know what has to be done.
Is that really going to be enforced?
The guy is put away for life. He finished 10 years, and the law read that the rabbinic courts can put him away for 10 years. No one ever dreamt a moron would still refuse to divorce his wife. So they put the Supreme Court unanimous decision last week. It was big news here. He's put away for life.
All
now,
of them?
Excuse me?
All of them?
Until they give a get.
All of them.
Yeah, it doesn't mean all. It means if the Beit Din rules that this guy is this Masarev to give a get when there's a chiyuv on him to give a get, they can put him into jail. And the Dayanim are doing it more and more.
Beit Din has to rule that.
Yeah, and generally it works. But here you have a Siki whose hatred for his wife is so great, he's willing to destroy his life in the process of destroying hers. And here, the only solution is physical punishment. But since it's the year 2014, and we have to be westernized and modern, we can't do what the Gemara says, what the Rambam paskins lahalacha. Rakefet is an old-fashioned Jew, and in Rakefet's world, there would be no guy who wouldn't give a get, because no moron can... And if he drops dead, he drops dead. That's the story, Reb Kiveika. He came to Warsaw, you don't know this famous story, Reb Kiveika, and they had there a guy who refused to give a get, and they pleaded with Reb Kiveika, say a few words to him, maybe he'll listen. And Reb Kiveika quoted the Mishnah to him in Kedushin, that a woman gains her freedom either with a get or the death of her husband. And Reb Kiveika said to him, whoever doesn't give it the get, he drops dead. P.S. The next morning, the guy dropped dead, and the woman was free. Oh, that saved him. Reb Kiveika's Reb Kiveika. Rakepet has to...
Can you arrange that in America for a friend?
You go to the Satma Goon Squad, and they'll take care of it. Take my word for it. Let me teach
them. Philadelphia police will arrest them.
No, not in New York. In New York, the Satma Goon Squad, when they leave a guy in the cemetery in Staten Island with a note on him, when you wake up, you'll be alive. Next time, if you haven't given a get, you will not be alive. The police don't interfere. They know what's going on. That's what I'm told.
What about okay. Baltimore?
But I don't know. I only know New York, and I know New York through a very prominent medical doctor who once referred a case to the Grunskan, and boy, did he give a get quickly. He was a friend of mine.
So what do we do in Baltimore?
I don't know what, please, I know
this
the
means that this is the only way please, that please,
let me teach. What are we supposed to do? It's Eishadish. Either there's halacha or there's no halacha. What do you do with Shabbos? Shabbos is Shabbos and Kashrut is Kashrut.
Why is it that Rabbonim don't put a person in Chayrim?
They put people in Chayrim. What good does the Chayrim do today? Because he doesn't care, and you're in Chayrim, and what? And the Mashgiach of Lakewood called anyone who voted for Bennett an apikairis. So the people who voted for Bennett called the Mashgiach an apikairis. You know, yeah, you can't curl out of this. So it's not a closed society. Now, so these shilas are epic making. And you cannot come along and say, I'm going to do, and my heart bleeds, we have to help the woman, the Rav didn't know what he's talking about. You have to know how to paskin, and you have to understand how you're paskining. And the Ramah says, the imhu bahora'at disvechetta b'hu dava isur dioraita yelech l'chumra. V'yim dava d'rabbanan Yeleich acha hamekil. If it's a Torah law, you have to be machmir. If it's a rabbinic law, you can be lenient. Fine. Hey, wait a minute. Let's say it's a machloikis poskim, and let's say on one side it's the Rif, the Rush, and on the other side it's a guy named Rakefet. What do you mean? You just take your choice, you do what's convenient. Ah, when do you have choice? V'davka im beit hacholkin heim shavim. If they're equal, machloikis the Rambam and the Rif, all right. A machloikis the Rush and the Rashba, you're dealing with Rishonim, you're dealing with equals. Then you can take your choice. Aval ein somchim al divrei katan neged divrei gadol mimeno b'chachma uv'minyan. Oh my! We just said, and if you have someone who's a lightweight, and someone who's much greater in learning and knowledge, and many more Talmidim, that's what minyan means, as you will say. Then we go after the one who is greater. Now, this takes us, I want to interrupt for 1 second. This takes us to a very contemporary she'ela. What's more important? Reb Moshe? Or the computer? What's the fault with the computer? What's the gadlut of Reb Moshe? The computer will spit out endless sources. Who wrote them? So they'll find the source in Hapades that was written by a rabbi in Iowa, who is not the greatest London, but he wrote Napades and took a stand and took an opinion. If you start looking around at endless sources, you're going to be very confused. Who do you count? Who lines up? An opinion of the Chazon Ish? How much is it worth? Against 5 moderate Rashi Yeshiva. An opinion of the Vilna Gaon? The computer doesn't differentiate. Reb Moshe knows how to differentiate. The Rav, when he had a paskin, and unfortunately for the Rav, he had the paskin because he became a shtat Rav. He became rabbi in Massachusetts. He was very different than Reb Aaron Cutler, Reb Moshe Feinstein. The Rav had to literally go into kindergarten classes with Lulav and Etrog on Sukkot to teach the kids what the Chag is about. Maimonides was the only day school that had classes Chol HaMoed Sukkot. You know why they had classes Chol HaMoed Sukkot? Most of the kids came from homes where there was no Sukkah, no Lulav, no Etrog. The Rav used to go in Friday morning to kindergarten classes and tell them about Yiddishkeit. He had to become a posek. He couldn't be like Reb Chaim. He couldn't hide behind the Briska Dayan, Reb Simcha Zelig Riga. The Rav was a Litvisha posek. He only looked at the main achronim. But he knew who the main achronim were. He knew already what the note of Yehuda was, what the Chatam Sofer was. He could give value judgment and see, this is a problem with the computer. It's very interesting. Minyan counts, but who do you add up? With all due respects to Aaron Rakefet and many other names you give, and you mention us, we paskin against the Chazon Ish. The Dateline, for instance. Shilas have come into Gris over the decades on the Dateline. So Rabbi Miller always referred the questionnaire to me, said we have a faculty member who's an expert on this topic. Okay, and I paskin what I paskin, but I didn't paskin like the Chazon Ish. No? Okay. You got to know what you're doing. It's not Rakefet paskening. I have enough sources on my side, enough achronim, enough gedolim, that I can come out and pasken against the Chazon Ish. But you've got to be very careful when you go to Minyan. And this is a very delicate question that has come up time and time again in modern times as we become computerized people and we depend on the computer. And I know myself, I've become, from the time that David Katz taught me when I was over 70, and I said to David, you know what? Teach me the computer. He said, Rebbe, it's a Chil Hashem, you don't know how to use a computer. I said, all right, teach me the computer. My mother learned when she was over 70, Zichrona Livracha. All right, I've become a computer. It's terrible. I look at the computer in the morning. I look at the computer at night. Before I go someplace, I check the computer. Half the time it's not updated. They don't tell you what the hours are. The hours have changed, whatever. But I've learned what a computer is. Allah had come and become in learning and research. What a computer, what you can find, what you can put in, what you can do. But can the computer paskin, or do you need a Rav Avadya Yosef, a Rav Moshe Feinstein? And this is very important, what they say
this
here.
This is an absolutely terrific
point. No, it's a very important point, and I feel it. And what do we mean? Minyan, we'll come back to Minyan. I just want to give you the basic Raman now. Then we'll analyze a little further.
By the way, I may ask. Yeah. What did the Rav think of Rechil Weinberg as a posek?
The Rav knew Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg. I can't answer that because by the time I knew Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, I was here and the Rav was out of commission. You follow? I can't answer. I did check what Rabbi Chil Yaakov thought of the Rav, and that I was able to do through his Talmidim Mufakim, who all lived in Jerusalem. Everyone who survived. And today, Rav Avraham Abba, who's his top Talmud after World War II, is my neighbor, my friend, my buddy. He's married to my student. So I know what Rabbi Chil Yaakov thinks. But I'll tell you this about Rabbi Chil Yaakov. He was the posek of Germany, and he was the posek of Europe post-World War II. And when Rabbi Dr. Leo Young had a shaila, he turned to Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg.
Not to the Rav?
No, not to the Rav, not to Rav Moshe. Turn to Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, because he yet knew him from Germany. So you see that there are cherets for him. And when you read the memoir literature, including Making of a Gadol, you see that Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg was the biggest dealer on the Litvashi yeshiva scene. It's very, very fascinating. And I don't want to go into more detail, but you know, I've given many lectures where Rabbi Chil Yaakov differs from the Rav, and there's a basic difference. The Rav, as Tovis said, adjusted to a new world. He was very at home in the new world. You never felt the dichotomy of the Rav. You, as the Rebbe said, I'm very proud of my students until 3 o'clock. They learn in a yeshiva. Like I quoted this many times. I have it in the second volume of the Rebbe. And they're on a level of the Lashon. All right, I don't believe the Rebbe there, but Peseda. Rakefet is at least trying to be on a level of a Lashon. We'll put it that way. I just heard on the radio, I was on a tape, I heard a husband from 40 years ago. Talmud Chacham, what the word Talmud, at least I'm a Talmud trying to be a Chacham. But there was never a dichotomy. And at 3 o'clock they went up to college and the Rav was, you never felt the dichotomy. We learned with the Rav, you know what I'm saying. It's not that he bridged the two worlds into one or he synthesized them into one. But you never, Gevet Toshev, harmonious coexistence. Rav, that's my word, my coin that if I would have spoken about the Rav, I would have had what to say. Everyone complained there was no Kiddush. Say that, but to hear Tova, Rebbetzin Tova, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein speak, and a grandson, was very moving, very, very bekovetic, and the crowd that was there. So I want to tell you, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov, there was a chasm. He never stopped being the Slabodka yeshiva boy. And as much as he conquered the Western world, and a PhD, and Chochmat Yisrael, and Mechkan Tahar, which the Rav never, ever undertook or entered into. Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov, if you came to him and you said, where should I study? Go to Slabodka, go to Mir. Without Eastern Europe, you can't amount to anything. Then you can come to Germany. You follow? There's a difference here. And it reflects in their whole Weltanschauung, their writings, their thinking. The Rav remained a Litvak. He had a lot more to him, but as a Litvak, he was no different than Rav Aaron Cutler.
What would the Rav Weinberg have said in present time with the Haredim and the army and stuff like that? Mir and Brisk and...
I'll show you in a later today. I have to give Ephraim something. We spoke about, I have sources, unbelievable. You'll get your answer in a half hour. Hold off. Now, okay? Just wait a half hour.
Oh, I'll wait an hour.
Okay, no. You can't. We'll never get home tonight. They're going to block the streets. The Prime Minister's coming here, you know, up the street, Lower Lane, to the Kfarim, to the Makom HaKadosh. That's a few minutes from us. Now, so you see, when you're Paskin, you have to understand who's who, what's what. You can be Mekil, but not if the Machmirim are bigger in learning and have more students. But watch. All this is under normal circumstances. Afilu b'shat ha-dachak. With everyone yelling and screaming at you, you can't be too quick to be lenient. Ela im kain. Hayagam Kain Chepsed Meruba. You see, this is subjectivity. What do you mean, Chepsed Meruba? And here you have to have feeling for life. Chepsed Meruba, Aguna is Chepsed Meruba, Mamzeret is Chepsed Meruba. Okay, in those two cases, when I'll give Shurim on Aguna, I'll show you sources that it's a mitzvah to try your best lahakel b'misgeret ha-hilchatid in these two particular areas. Because that's Chepsed Meruba, that nothing compares to that. It's literally killing people. If someone's a mamzer, they can't marry. If someone's an aguna, they can't be married. This is shvichat damim, plain and simple. And you should see the sources on this. But not only there. Hefsid Maruba, the story I told you about Rakefet. I would never paskin on a frying pan in Michlala. Neither one can marry. What do you want?
Yeah, but a mamza is born like this. A guna is
so, but neither one can marry. Halacha l'maisa. A mamza has to be told, go find a Gentile woman, an Italiana. I know in Torah Vadas, I know a case, they said, go find an Italian woman, run away with her. You know why an Italian? They look Jewish and they have Jewish values. And she's willing to convert and marry her and just disappear from the scene and live happily ever after. But that's not for now.
Is the kid a mamzer in that case?
No. The Kesef Matachim Mamzerim. You can play. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. How you do it. But the kid is Nitmak. Even the Nitma, whatever. There are sources. I know a case like that. Actually, the halacha, what they told him. But the Nebuch, a Mamzer can't marry. I mean, what I'm telling you is crazy. It can't work out.
Not as fall. In the case of an Aguna, it's also not her fall. I know that, but it's something after marriage and stuff. But this guy's born. You can't. He didn't control it.
You tried to change.
But in all these cases where you have chesed meruba, we try our best lahakel, even if it's a minority opinion. And that's what I said with the frying pans. Because I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and the Rav held that frying pans can't be kashid with Hagalah. You need Liban, a Liban Gomor, because there's no liquid in a frying pan. I would send them to Rabbi Edman, I told you, was a Talmud of Rabbi Chaim David Regensburg, who later married Bezivik Sheni, the daughter of Rabbi Chaim Hella, and Rav Regensburg, who I yet knew, he had a tradition that frying pans are no different than a regular pot. You always put a little oil in a little liquid. You can kasher it with Hagalah. So it was Hepzik Marupa, a girl in Michlala with limited money, tell her to throw away a frying pan. I couldn't do. So you see, there is subjectivity. And then the Ramah says further, listen to this. Very fascinating. V'keinim haya yachid neged rabbim holchim acha harabbim b'chol makom v'afilu ein harabbim maskimim b'tam echad ela kol echad yesh lo pam b'fnei atzmo hoel v'heim maskimim l'inyan hadin mikrei rabbim v'hazlinim batraichu. And you see, again, normal circumstances, not chesed meruba. One, a yachid against rabbim, we go with the rabbim. Let's take the dateline. The Chazon Ish was a yachid. Many people had different opinions, but they all disagreed with the Chazon Ish. But each one had a different reason, a different opinion. Nevertheless, they add up together. La halacha, it's rabbim against yachid. And you can paskin like the rabbim. Even Lahakel, the Rabbin counts. With the international dateline, it's a very difficult question. If the Kuzari is right, the Chazon Ish is right, then Shabbos in Japan is a different day. It's on Sunday, it's not Shabbos. But
for them too,
it's not just you, permanently. If you're in Japan, you have a different Shabbos. But if you paskin like the rabbi and everyone puts the dateline differently, or like from Menachem Kasher and then Rav Tukachinsky, others deal with this too, who says there's a dateline? B'chol moshvoteichem. Wherever Shabbos is Shabbos, according to the local calendar, that is Shabbat. And if that's the case, you come to Japan, you follow the local Shabbat.
It's like getting lost in the woods.
It's the Gemara where you're lost in the woods and suddenly you start counting and the seventh day is Shabbos. All right. But that's not a perfect raya because there it's only, you don't have a choice. Here you have a choice. But I always paskin when people ask me, I say the first Shabbos observe 2 days. The Sunday don't do malacha d'oraita. The next Shabbos you're like everybody else. If you're going to be there for, you know, a long time, that's the way I would paskin. We can be samach on Rabbi Nachum Kasher and all the others who have different datelines, but it's my son-in-law yells at me, he feels the Chazon Ish, he knows the Guzari by heart, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the very difficult Gemara with the quarter of the hours, the difference in time. All right, but Psak has to be Psak, Lamdis L'chud and Psak L'chud. But what's fascinating is a rabbin doesn't have to be the same reason. You can have 18 against one with 18 different reasons. They count as 18, not as one.
Yeah.
How big of an area is involved with this?
The dateline is, it depends where you put the line.
It could be maps.
You can wind up with endless shilas or limited shilas.
It's like Thailand?
I don't believe so. No, Thailand is closer to China. It's not involved. But I can tell you, if you take the viewpoint, Shabbos is the local community. And there's a lot of Rishonim where you can derive this from their perushim on the Torah.
But you will admit that there is a mentality among many that dafka you have to go with the chum.
I'll tell you,
so they don't make a difference that all that each study. They have a proclivity, they must go with the chum.
That could be, but I'll tell you, you have a tremendous problem with flying during Omer. Because depending, Michael, you have a tremendous problem with flying during Omer. Depending how you fly, you lose a day or gain a day. It's a lo pasha. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I saw with my own eyes, a businessman who was only worth, they told me after, was a little guy, I met him in the Beis Medrash, introduced me to him, I taught his daughter, he thanked me. This is in Melbourne. They told me after he's only worth $150 million Australian dollars, which I think today even more than the American dollar. His son-in-law is Yassel Legutnik. So he was observing 3 days Shavuot that year. So I asked him, how come? He said, no, I'm on Lubavitcher. And he explained to me that he crossed the date line, he lost the day. The Rebbe held, you can only observe Shavuot at the end of, after you count 49 days. So it turned out, the Shavuot of the whole world, right, he didn't do Malacha. The next day, Yom Tov Sheni was real Shavuot, was his 50th day. And the day afterwards was Yom Tov Sheni of the Galah. 3 days.
So he counted a different day than everybody?
That's a big shaila. What do you do when you gain a day or lose a day? A lot is written. The Rav got the shaila. You don't know what went on. What do you do? And the Rav suddenly you're crossing the date line. The pilot should announce it, ask him to announce it. You count without a bracha. You grab in the day you're going to miss. And the truth is, there's no real solution. What do you do when you gain a day so you count again without a bracha? That's an easy way out. But what do you do when you lose a day? It's a real problem. Okay, now, watch. Listen to this carefully. This is so important for Griscolel. V'yim haya minhag be'ir lahakel, mibnei shechochem echad hora lachem kach, hochim achadaito, v'yim chacham acher ba la'aso ma'shechem matirim, Nahut Bolisa. Watch, Yitzchak. What does this say? This tells you the power of the Maradiatra. We've lost the concept of a Rav. The United States of America into World War II, the ruling authorities were the Rabban. A Rav in a shul was king. He was the Maradiyah. Of course, America changed. Rashi Yeshiva became the kings. I quoted to you, and I quoted time and again, I quoted in my book, I quote the Rav, where the Rav says to Rabbi Beryl Rosenzweig, remember? Didn't I quote it? Was it last week? And Beryl, and he says to Beryl, when you were growing up, who were your idols? Three rabbis. Goldstein, Lichtstein, and Young. Your son is growing up, Rabbi Michael, who KBY is trying to get. They announced he's coming for Chodesh Elul. Who are his idols? The Rashi Yeshiva. So you see, we've lost the concept of Moradiatra. It's an important concept, because when you're a Rav in a shul, your word has to be final. But today, you have kids, let's say, learning in Lakewood, learning in Torah Vadas, learning in Yeshivas with Chochanan. They look at you. You're a nice guy, Rabbi. But your psak doesn't hold water with me. And when it becomes lahalacha in a shul, you have all types of problems. Basically, lo tidkodetu, it's an isa d'oraita. But here you see the power. That if in a community they were lenient, and now this is playing into Yitzchak's hands, and along came a new Rav, and he is Machmir, you have to be Machmir. He's the Mora, the Atret. So Yitzchak, don't say a word yet. So Yitzchak is saying, you see, I'm right. The Ramah gives an example of a Rav being Machmir where they were Mekil before. And Yitzchak says, this is what? A mental drive that everyone looks for chumras. There's only one problem, Yitzchak. Look into the Shach, your great, great grandfather. Sif Katran Chaf in the Shach. And the Shach knocks the teeth out of his great grandson and says the same law would apply if in a city they were Machmir and along came a new Rav and his Mekil. We follow the new Rav. Got it, Yitzchak? What do you see here? Sifkat and Chaf, I think I said. One second, let me check. No, it's exactly on Chaf Hei Bet. It's exactly on the Ramam I'm reading. Chaf, Sifkat and Chaf, right in the Shach, quoting the Bach. And look, one second. Look at the power of a Rav. The earlier Rav was Machmir, the new Rav is Mekil. The earlier Rav was Mekil, the new Rav is Machmir. Ein l'dayana ma'ishen Rav, yiftak b'dok ishmul b'dorov. You have to follow the rabbi who's there now. And this is the power of the Mora d'Atra. And I can tell you a little episode from my own life where I always was Makir Taiva. And let me mention his name, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. In my first rabbinet, I got my ears knocked off. Beaten to a pulp. All of 23 years old. People are still mad at me until today. 50 plus years later. I told you, a Talmud of mine, who I just spoke to today in Florida, wanted me, I should be scholar in residence in Lower Merion Synagogue. He said, that would be great. I'd love to go back. And his cousin is the head of the education committee. His cousin emails him, we don't have money. So my mom said, what's the big deal? I'll give you the money. So the guy emails back the truth. The Signe Ha'eda, there's the president from 1961. He should live and be well. He's still mad at me. You know how many years later? The Balabas, Rebbeinu Shelolam. Read my book. Does Rakepin bear any grudge? I write in the book. I was an idiot. I was a young person. I was the wrong guy. I didn't know a darn thing. I didn't have teachers like you have who try to prepare you for the real world. Neil Liebman? He's not alive? Then his wife died. I didn't hear that he died. Check it out. Yeah, check it out. Because he's the Zikmei Haida. There's no one else there. Leo Levin is out. All the other guys are gone already. It's 52 years later.
You don't have any grudge.
I have no grudge.
You have never stopped talking about this.
I've never stopped talking because it was a lesson in life that you leave the yeshiva hot shop and you get your face smacked. But you didn't hear me maledict anyone. Chasva, do you ever hear me maledict anyone? Read Washington. Do you see malediction there? Or do you see an honest description? I describe myself as an idiot. I quote Charlie Liebman's description of the happiest guy in the world to say I was in, you know, I made a lot of mistakes.
You quoted the Rolf in Boston when he made a fuss about saying...
Going to quote that May 2nd when I talk about the Rolf. That's very powerful. I'll talk about the Rolf. At the OU, it'll be announced, there'll be a whole thing. Come back here. But I just want to tell you, listen. So there was a Brit. One of the Balabatim in Lower Merion Synagogue was my classmate who was a survivor. And I remember the day he arrived in Yeshiva Salanta, got off the boat, must have been 45 or 46, and he and his brother were standing in the hallway crying, there's a nicht verstanden ein Wort in English. They didn't understand one word in English. Both of them went on to become world famous in their endeavors, and both of them married very famous rabbis' daughters. So he married, my chaver, Bert, married Rabbi Samuel Chill's daughter. Do you remember Rabbi Samuel Chill from Brooklyn? No, that's his brother. Rabbi Samuel Chill learned in Mir, and then he was rabbi in Brooklyn, and what a Adam Gadol. And he comes to the Brit. Now here we are at the Brit, all the Balabatim, here we are at the Suda, and then Machabed Rabbi Chill to speak. The grandfather, and Rabbi Chill gets up and says, I will not speak until the Maradiatra speaks first. Rabbi Rothkopf is the Maradiatra. Please, Rabbi, you speak first. And boy, I was a kid that was like pumping up a tire with air. That's the concept of Maradiatra. That's the Ramah, that's the Shah. Now, for your edification, the rest of the Ramah is the Ramah that we dealt with for many, many weeks. That what about if you find a sefer that nobody knew? Once you find a manuscript, then it could very well be we have to reconsider the halacha. We have to say, even though halacha kabatra'i, like the last authority, but that's only when they knew.
If the Maradiatra okay. is less of a Talmud Chacham than one of the Balabatim, what happens then?
Then the Maradiatra better have his life insurance paid up. And if the Balabas learn Musa, he'll know how to be decent and upright and not eat the heart out of the Maradiatra. And I can tell you a story that many Rabbanim who moved into communities would call the Rav in advance and ask permission to move in. And, you know, I can give you a simple example. In Kew Gardens Hills, Rav Michal Katz moved in the 60s from the Bronx. I believe it was late 60s. Maybe I'm missing a year or two, but I'm certainly right in generally speaking. And I know that he called Rabbi Schoenfeld and like asked permission to move in, and Rabbi Schoenfeld welcomed him warmly, and I heard a talk where Rabbi Schoenfeld says, join the other 72 Rabbanim living in Kew Gardens Hills. But you have to have Edelkeit. And I will never correct someone in public. I don't mind if I'm corrected. I love it. I'm the happiest guy alive if I'm corrected. But I know some people are sensitive. I will never correct anyone in public. If I feel a correction has to be made, and only if it has to be made, I will do it quietly. The other day I made one call to make one correction because I felt it was an important correction of what I heard with a date, and it was repeated twice incorrectly, and it happens to be very important to get the dates right because Reb Shimon Shkup taught at YU for over a year, and if you don't get the dates right, then Art Scroll can stay Reb the Meitzchit that died in 28, and Reb Moshe Soloveitchik started giving Shin Yeshiva in 28, and they have to never deal with their tremendous problem how the Gorodna Rosh Yeshiva, one of the heads of the 20th jury, could teach in Yeshivas Rabbi and Yitzchak Chanan when it's open to college 28, 29, and compose in front of the building. So that correction is important. Reb Moshe came to America December 29. You want to know why it took so long? I told the class, and I got even more details, that once the American embassy wouldn't let him go because they had an operation, an ingrown toenail, they called him, after you have an operation, you have to wait 7 years and be examined, and this, that. Congressman Emanuel Seller introduced a bill into Congress allowing Reb Moshe to come, a special bill for Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. It took a while, but that enabled him to come December 29, after Reb Shimon had already gone back to Europe to go back to the Yeshiva Grodna, as I had explained. Okay, now, look at the Shach. You're going to find the Kuntres, what I referred to last week. It comes at the end, Bahan Hagat Hora'ah Iser V'cheta. Kitzur, he gives a short version of this Ramah. He comments on this Ramah. And let me just take some of the comments and elaborate. Look at Bet, Sif Bet, in the Kundris of Hanhagat Horaat Isa Vecheta of the Shach. And we're talking the Shach, Mi Lana Yotegadol, May the Siftei Kohen, Rab Shabtai HaKohen, the Shach. So he raises the question, who is called greater, Yotei Gadol B'Chachma U'V'Minyan? What about if one of them is a Rav of a Kehillah and one of them is a Rebbe in a yeshiva? And obviously, a Rebbe will have more Talmidim. Talmidim, of course, will agree with their Rebbe. Don't we always quote the Rav? Don't the Talmidim of Reb Moshe always quote Reb Moshe? Don't the Talmidim of Reb Aaron Cutler always quote Reb Aaron Cutler? No? Who is bigger? Who is bigger? Is this a minion? Does this count? Absolutely. The more Talmidim you have, the bigger you are, the bigger the Rebbe, the more weight you have, the more important your psakim are. And you see what we see from here? The most important part of Torah is tradition, passing it on. It's not the individual. You can be the biggest goan in the world, but a minzetzt in a winkel, if you just sit in a corner and you don't have influence, you don't reach out, you don't teach, you do not carry the same weight as a Rebbe who may not be as big a goan as you are. But he had hundreds of Talmidim, thousands of Talmidim. This is the concept of Mesorah. Shall shell it, HaMesorah. And I want to add something else, a little bit deeper. It's worth thinking about this. Remember, we spoke about Minhag. And we spoke about the Gemara, it's four times in Shas, first time is in Brachot, Memhei Mod Aleph. Fuk Chazi Mai Ama Devar. What's very important is what the people do. What is happening on the street? How are the Jews living? What are they doing? What is their practice? Fokazi, what the people do determines halacha. The Gemara didn't know what bracha you make before you drink. Water is the staff of life. You can live without bread, but you can't live without liquids. Maybe you make a bar of fashis before you drink. And we go and we see what the people are doing. They made a shakal, then a bar of fashis. That's what we do. That's why Talmidim is so important. Talmidim are a kiyum. Fukhazi. But we don't know for sure. We have a machloket. We have a question. We don't know for sure. Take the Rebbe with the thousands of Talmidim. Those thousands of Talmidim of what they're doing are determining which way the halacha has to go. And that's why the Shach is so correct. You can't put a Rebbe down. All right, he has Talmidim. It's Rabbanim, the RCA. I don't know, 600-700 Rabbanim. 700 follow the Rav. Who are they? What do they know how to learn? Fukhazi. It's not just they're following a Rebbe. They're living Judaism. And if this is the way they're living it, Im lo neviim hein, the Gemara Psachim, b'nei neviim hein. And this determines the halacha. They are Yeremim. They are Shleimim. They are Talmidim. And they help determine. Okay, one more point today. One more point. Hefsid Merubah. Look into Gimel in the Shach. Look into Gimel. So subjective. A poor man, everything is judged by money. And then money, again, I don't know, I hope you've never experienced it, but I know, I can still remember when my wife was asked for a donation of 15 lira, I still remember who asked. And we just, 15 lira, like 15 shekel today. We didn't have it. Pashit, we didn't have it. I remember when you had to buy shoes for the children, forget about that, you didn't have Shabbos shoes. I remember my daughter asking for Shabbos shoes in 69. We told in Israel, you wear one pair of shoes. All right. That was the reality. Money is money. Hefsid Maruba, you can only judge subjectively. A poor man, it's money. A rich man, big deal. So you throw out a 50 shekel, you throw out 100 shekel. Thank God today I can throw out 50-100 shekels. Don't have to pinch every shekel. But a human being is a human being. I'll give you an example from the Shach. What about us before Shabbos? Before Yom Tov? What we said before? Well, what we said before, Archim are coming. Guests are coming. You don't want to embarrass the person in public. People invited for Shabbos. I always joke with my wife, where's the fish? Where's the liver? You know, I've seen the way hotels serve. It's unbelievable the amount of food that's wasted. But fish, liver, various soups, the main course, endless desserts, salads. Ashtia kadat, ain't no nice. Okay, you have guests coming. You don't want to be embarrassed. I understand that. But tell me, you're home alone for Shabbos. Guests aren't coming. You have a problem with the soup. Some milk fell in. Throw it away. You'll do without soup. All right, you'll have cold chicken. The blech didn't work out. All right, there's no chalent. See, so the Shach says, there you have to take in consideration Simchat Yontif, Kavod Yontif, Oneg, Shabbos, Kavod V'Oneg. It's not a Shabbos, it's not a Yontif. Some people, eating is very important. All right, I'll admit when you grow older, you don't put the same stress in eating. I see as my grandchildren grew, they would tell me, food is only steak, good meat. That's a Suda. Now they're a little bit older. All right, they start to understand. Fish is fish. Could be it's more important, healthier than meat. Suddenly, I have one grandson, his fiance has introduced him to certain vegetables, certain fruits that he would never look at before. Hey, a kiwi is good. Finally discovered America. Baruch Hashem. So you see, the Shach says that with a wealthy man, there are other factors. Orchim. And just, even if you're alone, it should be a Simchat Yom Tov. The Kovet Shabbat V'Yom Tov, he says, for an Ashir. Can't Asa help him? He's used to this food. He needs it. He has to have it. It's part of his Shabbos, part of his Yom Tov. Very fascinating. Now, I want to tell you, you won't believe it. But Rav Asher Weiss, last Thursday night, on Parshat Tazria Metzora, spoke about this very topic. What was his takeoff point? That HaTorah Chasa Al Mamon Shel Yisrael. You know, before the Kohen comes into the house, you take all the kelim out. And Chazal tell us, and Rashi quotes it, the Torah was concerned with the monetary standing of the Jewish people. They shouldn't lose a fortune. You know, in Muncie, with the Don chickens and the meat, people had to throw ovens out. People had to throw dishwashers out. People had to throw dishes away that you couldn't kasher, chasina. HaTorah chasa al mamon shel Yisrael.
The guy's right here now.
I know. Israel is a near miklat, unfortunately. I would not allow such an individual. And he had the chutzpah to tell the gabbai in my shul he did tshuva. So they asked me, I said, if he can show you he paid up all the money that he cost, then we'll talk about God. Until I showed them hilchat tshuva. First you pay up, then we'll talk about the Ribbono shel Olam. But that's why he ran away from America. Now there are lawsuits in California, multi-million-dollar lawsuits, I understand, against this. But I would take it out on the rabbinate there. It's terrible. How do you give a guy hashgacha if he cheated on you once before? If a person cheats once like that, it shows it's part of his character. It's a fadogmkeit. You can't. A cheater remains a cheater.
He's got another
hechsher
now.
No. Rechnitz bought it. The hechsher was Chabad for a second. Rechnitz bought it.
One
Rechnitz.
Rabbi saw him at the OU. He was a marketeer. He threw him out.
You're talking about Finkel. Talking about the Muncie scandal.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Beseda, but there was a big scandal now on the coast. That may be similar. It's a Machlokes HaPoskim Day. No one knows for sure what he transferred into the Aaron's bags. Was it kosher but not glad, or was it Nevelet and Treifat? God have mercy. And you got to give credit to that detective who did it without doing it on his own. An Israeli-born guy who has a big detective agency there, all the tricks he learned from the army and intelligence. And he tracked the guy down. He said, I did it because it bothered me that he was doing what he was doing. And he had, you know, you have video clippage of the guy transferring from his truck the minute the Mashgiach leaves. But it shows you that there's no way to give Hashgacha to someone that's not trustworthy, because you can't have a Mashgiach with him 24/7. You understand? The minute the Mashgiach goes away, he can be the best Mashgiach in the world. The minute he goes away, that guy can do whatever he wants. So I want you to know, Rav Asher Weiss, his whole talk was on Hefsed Merubah. What is the concept of Hefsed? I don't want to go into the Lundus here, but I'm going to touch upon it next week when I deal with the Oraita and the Rabbanan. If you go through this Kuntris, you'll understand where he's getting it from. So I want to reiterate, I have one more thing to say, but let me just reiterate. So what did we do today? As I said, today was a very important shiur. It's the heart of Pesach. And that Ramah, and that shach opens your eyes to what it means to be a posek, what it means to be a lamdin, what it means to understand the human situation, and all the different klalim, the oraita, the rabbanan, chefset merubah, orchim, kovid, Shabbos v'yantav, which the Ramah adds, yachid keneged rabbim, what do we call a rabbim, talmidim, who has more talmidim, and it's just an overwhelming Ramah and Shach with so much material in it. And I need not tell you, the last part, we spent many months analyzing a new manuscript. As far as analyzing the rest of the Ramah, that's responsible literature, and Be'ezrat Hashem will spend the next 20 years analyzing. Now, yeah.
Let's say we know that theoretically in Shabbos you're not allowed to tell a goy do something because.
Yeah.
But let's say, what you just mentioned about only Shabbos and only Yom.
Yeah.
Let's say that the air conditioner didn't go on.
Okay, so the air conditioner is an open.
All the heat.
Reb Moshe, the heat already, the Achrayim all were matir because we're all sickies when it comes to not having enough heat. So logos ruba rabbanim b'makom tzah. The Reb Moshe already paskins that air conditioning, we become so used to it, bisman hazeh, that there too we can be mekil. There's also, if it's a shul, there's the added factor that it's l'tzorech harabim, l'dvar mitzvah. There's a lot to be said. The Rav held that going up in an elevator where there was an elevator man, if you're going up to eat Sudat Shabbat, it's a mitzvah. Even to sleep on Shabbat, a shtickel, a kiyum. So there too, the Rav was mekil, so I'm told. So what you're saying is absolutely correct.
It's always via guy or
Yeah, we're talking via guy, not on Kaliach Yad. Kaliach Yad is that when they need a lot more to be made here, but this is Makom Salo, Gazruso, it's part of the halacha. Now, I just want to state that on my way to Mikolto, Ephraim, we were talking about sources of yeshiva boys and the army and the not taxing those who learn Torah, the Gemara and Baba Batra, and the Rambam at the end of Hilchat Shmita V'Yovel, if you want to be like Shevet Levi. So I have to tell you, Rav Shmuel David Butchko, who's from a Talmud of a Talmud of Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, married to my student, an American lady, a great family. He's Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Esther in Kochav Yaakov. He just published all the sources you want on the army. He makes me look like a conservative, much more extreme. And Talmud Torah, there you'll find the Rambam, Hilchot Talmud Torah, Perek Vav. Take a look at the halacha. You'll see already what I told you about smacking a Talmud, that you're chayiv, and take it. You'll get the sources before.
You'll make him into a Talmud Chacham.
He is a Talmud Chacham already.
Can that be Xerox so we can all have the sources?
You're talking about the army. Okay, so I'll Xerox it. So I'll give it to you tomorrow. You'll be here tomorrow? You can come tomorrow? Okay. Yitzchak,
yes.
This is the Kuntris on Hefsid Meruba, and you'll see in the other Kuntris of last week.
Okay.
Now, is there anyone here with a Hasidish Neshama who has a Kesha to Vishnitz? This is the Vishnitz publication on the death of the last Vishnitz Rebbe about a year ago. Okay, so if anyone is interested, it's very fascinating, Vishnitz and how they portray him, and his son Reb Yisrael. If anyone is interested, it's in modern Hebrew.
Where are they located, the Vishnitz people?
B'nai Brak. What are you talking about where they're located? B'nai Brak. We just spoke the 20th Yahrzeit of the Rav. This is on the 20th Yahrzeit of Rabbi Joseph H. Lookstein. They've republished the Kehilat Jashrim bulletin that was published upon his death. So this very fascinating. Excuse me? On the 20th Yahrzeit. It was published in 1999, I think. Take a look at the date.
Did you hear about what's happening with Rabbi Droid?
Yeah. My name is not Goldvass, so don't worry about it. What does that mean? That's the name he took, right? He created a phony person by the name of Rabbi Goldwasser. Because he wanted...
To the Koran Sitter, they thank both of them in the introduction.
Yeah, unbelievable. He has a good sense of humor, but you can't fool, he's a genius. If anyone wants a copy of the Shach, here is the Shach. And gentlemen, with tomorrow is a very interesting Shayur.
He's a wonderful teacher.
We got to get out of here because they're going to close the streets.
But he's a real scholar, so why did he do that?
Why he do that? Never, he wanted to have some fun. That's terrific.
No, but what was his motive?
Didn't Chantum Referral Hirsch also use a pseudonym?
Yeah, but he didn't create a different person. There's such a thing as a pen name. One time, and listen to this, one time the Jewish agency wanted me to... Listen to this story. One time the Jewish agency wanted me to give a lecture during the summer. And I didn't want a lecture in the summer. I wanted to prepare lectures. And they put pressure on me. So I agreed, but they had to use the name Harav Dr. Yitzchak Shachar. And that's really my name. My name is Aaron Yitzchak. And Rothkopf is redhead. Shachar is blackhead. I had black hair then. So I said, you have to use the name Yitzchak. And I walked into class, and these were people from America. No one knew who I was. They thought, Harav Shachar, Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Shachar. So I'm also guilty. I created a phony guy, but not as guilty as Rabbi Freud.
But what was his reason?
He wanted to infiltrate the rabbinic fellowship of Kovevei Torah. So he couldn't infiltrate as Rabbi Broy, But as Rabbi Goldwasser, he became a member. The guy is a genius, no matter which way you cut the cake. That's all I can say.